Hey, good afternoon. You know, I walked out of my apartment to come to the station, and I guess it's about 9:30 that I'm heading into the station. I was greeted with this dry air, and it just felt so. If you got up early, if you were leaving the house earlier than I did at 9:30, you had to feel it even more than I did. But this front did come through here because it just felt so pleasant. And it's still warm. I mean, really warm. It's still going to be kind of on the hot side. But boy, when you can walk outside and you don't feel like you're walking into a sauna, you know, it's just such a delight. And I was watching the weather last night on Channel 4 with Chris Franklin, and he's talking about, I guess it's the jet stream is coming down really low. It's dipping low into the south, into our area. And it looks like that's going to be a pattern that's going to last for a little while. And if it does, he's talking about maybe some early cool fronts that are going to actually make a difference. Now, I know it's hot every summer, but it seems like each summer it gets hotter, and it seemed like it was hotter this summer than ever before, but technically it wasn't, but it sure seemed that way. So, man, if we get some early cool fronts through here, that is going to be just awesome. I'm excited about the Rattler starting the Saints game, and I don't know what it's going to take. I'm hoping the Saints are thinking about this, but putting a rattlesnake when Rattler goes on the field, like when he's, you know, heading out on the field, or maybe after he throws a touchdown pass, and I'm hoping that he does, just a big rattlesnake with the rattle going on the big jumbotron, that would be really awesome. And then it would really be very cool if fans, and I wonder if there's going to be some kind of rattle that they're going to sell. Now, I don't know. It may be too soon to get into that. Spencer Rattler has been announced as the starting quarterback for the beginning of the season. If he ends up being the quarterback for, you know, a period of time, then I think some of those things may happen. But your last name is Rattler. I mean, there's a lot you can do with that. And I mentioned the other day that in the Dome, when they do that us versus them, you know, they could do like another team, the Rattler, and it could be a baby, you know, just shaking a baby rattle. And then it could be us, and it could be like a rattlesnake, the Rattler, us and them. So, you know, I just think it's kind of fun that his name is the Rattler, and I think we're going to see some plays where there are going to be some running plays for the quarterback, but I wouldn't think that they would do that too often because you've got a better chance of being hurt. And I heard yesterday on Sports Talk with Bobby and Mike and whoever else, I guess Charlie Long was there, maybe Steve Geller was there as well. I think all the guys were there. But they were talking about how Tyler Shuck's agent is happy with the quarterback rotation. And because if Tyler Shuck goes in early and blows it, then doesn't do well, then that's not good. If Tyler Shuck takes a little more time and gets more prepared, and then goes in, he's got a chance to become a hero and also not have his confidence shattered. Spencer Rattler had issues last year because he just didn't have the full team around him. They were banged up, and so, yeah, Rattler is 0-6 with the Saints. I think he's got a chance of getting a victory a week from this week when the season opens up. What is it? I think September the 7th in the Caesar Superdome against the Arizona Cardinals. But as you heard in the sports just now, the Saints are, I think, a six and a half point underdog. And in the NFL, that's a lot. But that's based on the idea that Kyler Murray and the Cardinals, you know, they may have had a bad year last year, but they're going to come out. They're going to come out, and like a lot of teams, they're going to come out smoking. They're going to come out trying to make it to the Super Bowl, and you know, they're looking at the rebuilding Saints with a new coach, a new quarterback, and new schemes and everything. They're looking at us as like a very new, inexperienced team that's going to be easy to beat. And I'm sure there are Arizona Cardinal fans that are just chomping at the bit to play the Saints in the first game. But You know, I don't know. I've got a feeling the Saints could surprise them. We'll have a lot of time to talk about that. I am so excited that football is beginning. I'm a huge football fan. I can sit there and just enjoy watching a game. And I'm far from an expert, but I've been a fan for a long time, and I pay attention, and quite often I look at football and coaching and players and the emotion behind it and the backstories. I kind of look at all of that as a metaphor for life, and I think there are great lessons to be learned from sports. So those are the reasons that I love sports, and I love football. Even though, you know, like, it doesn't do anything to my life in terms of, it doesn't make me healthier, it doesn't make me any more money, but, you know, just like you, I enjoy watching it. I'm so excited about LSU and Clemson, a top 10 matchup. And there's some other big games this weekend as well. But Saturday night at 6:30, Brian Kelly has a chance to get a victory, but it's not going to be easy because LSU is going to be at Clemson. And Clemson, I think, is ranked fourth in the country. LSU was ranked, I think, ninth in the country. So, you know, what's going to happen there? But, you know, I'm excited, and I'm really hoping that Brian Kelly has the team more prepared to play, because LSU under Brian Kelly has lost some much-anticipated opening games against big teams in the last few years. And hopefully this is going to be a victory this year. Ian Hoke is in the back in the office. He is working on office stuff this afternoon. So Coleman is our studio producer. I didn't have a chance to do it in the first hour, but good afternoon, Coleman.
How are you doing, Scoop?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing fine. Would you indulge me for like 3 minutes? I had an experience over the weekend that I think the listeners would benefit from.
Sure.
Okay, I would like to dispel the myth of what it is that I do as a call screener. So over the weekend, we had a guy that called, and while I was screening the call, I explained to him, I asked him, what would you like to talk about? And he was refusing to act, you know, to tell me what it is that he wanted to say. He was fearful that if he said that he disagreed with the host, that I would not let him on the show. He was very skeptical. I'm not doing that. The reason that I'm asking what you want to talk about is to make sure that it isn't really vulgar or obscene, or if you're not talking about what the host is talking about, or if somebody has made your point already. Those are the only three conditions where we won't let you on. So you shouldn't be skeptical and saying, well, I shouldn't tell you what I want to talk about because, you know, this, that, are you trying to screen the calls? As a matter of fact, if you do have an opinion that disagrees with the host, we might let you on first because we invite that. So no, I would not let you on if you have an opinion that disagrees with the host. Yes, I do have to know what you're saying before you say it, because we have to be careful who we let on the air. And I would not cut you off if you disagree with the host. The only reason I would cut you off is if you run out of time, if we run out of time for commercial break, or if you say something vulgar or obscene. So yes, you can call. Just don't curse. Just don't say anything vulgar. And you can disagree with the host. My job is not to filter out the people that disagree with the host. I just want to point that out.
Well, I'm glad you did. But let me add to this, that when we say call screener, we're not screening opinions. We could if we wanted to. We don't have to take your call. We're under no obligation to take your call. And maybe this person is used to other shows, because there are talk shows that don't want to let opposing opinions on. They just want to get sycophants of the host. They just want to get people on who agree with the host. And so this person who called Coleman was obviously a little angry to start out with, and testy. And so, you know, you don't have to be that way. We allow people on who disagree with me. Now, we kind of want to make sure that you're sober. I mean, this is New Orleans, and, you know, people are drinking all the time. And, you know, sometimes people call in, and sometimes they get through. And, you know, maybe they started the weekend a little early, or maybe they started the night a little early. And so when we screen calls, we're not screening opinions. But if you get on the air and you disagree, and you've made your point, and you're starting to repeat yourself, we might move on. But, you know, I set up a whole thing and posted this on Scoot on the Air Facebook a while back, but it was rules for calling into the show. And one of the understandings that everybody has to have is we don't have to take your call. We don't have to let you on the air. We do. There are a lot of shows that do not allow opposing opinions on the air. They just want people to agree with the host. They want to make it seem like everybody agrees. And it doesn't matter what you're talking about, not everybody agrees. I mean, I could talk about this being a beautiful day. Not everybody agrees this is a beautiful day. So, you know, it's okay to disagree. In a lot of ways, it's how you disagree that matters. So just keep that in mind. But, you know, we take your calls because this is a pretty open show and this is a pretty open radio station. But we don't have to take your call. We don't have to take any calls at all. It's just something that we do. All right. So let me mention this about something going on in Florida. The Fort Lauderdale city leaders are having an emergency meeting today to talk about how to respond to the state government getting ready to remove rainbow-colored crosswalks and other street art throughout Florida. And the deadlines are coming up. The Department of Transportation, under very Republican Governor Ron DeSantis, have ordered communities to remove crosswalks and other street art by early next month or risk millions of dollars in state funding. That way it would be lost. Now, the rainbow crosswalks were a way to celebrate gay rights and the LGBTQ community. Also, it's a tribute to black people, and also in some cases, it was a tribute to the police. In Tampa, there is a Back the Blue mural on the street outside of police headquarters. It remained in place today, but it's on the list for removal. There are plans to remove it in the next couple of weeks. And I'm thinking, of all the problems in the world, of all the problems that Florida probably has, this is not a big deal. But it is a big deal because this is a, you know, another attempt to just bash the LGBTQ community. I mean, what's wrong with a rainbow crosswalk? It's not going to turn kids gay. In fact, kids know about rainbows. Rainbows have been around for a long time. You can argue that God created rainbows. And so if a kid sees a rainbow crosswalk, a kid's going to just think, hey, this is really cool. It's a rainbow crosswalk. They're not going to think about all the things that homosexuals do. They're not going to think about that unless you tell them. Now, if you tell them, well, then they might think about that. But this is just, you know, this is just another attempt to feed the right-wing radicals in America. And the right-wing radicals, as much noise as they make, they do not make up anywhere near a majority of this country. They're a specific group of people, and they want to change America. And they want to remove gay marriage. They want to do a lot of things to our country. But I'm thinking with all of the problems, just even paying attention to rainbow crosswalks is just such a waste of time and such a reminder of really the mean-spirited nature of many on the far right. If you want to join us with a comment this afternoon, the Oakenheart Jewelers talk and text line is 504-260-1870. 504-260-1870. We're going to get to some of your text messages coming up in the next segment. And also, I want to share with you, we'll get to some of your calls too, but I want to share with you conservative MAGA host Charlie Kirk offering some advice to newly engaged Taylor Swift. This advice is so archaic, it's so Neanderthal, that I just find it difficult to believe that anybody still thinks this way. But I guess there are people who do, and Charlie Kirk is one of them. So we'll all talk about that coming up next. And we continue to remember Katrina 20 years later. It wasn't the wind, it wasn't the rain, it was the levee breaking, it was the flood. The Katrina story is your story, it's our story, it's New Orleans' story. And Friday, on the actual anniversary of the storm, join us at WWL for a special day-long broadcast featuring Tommy Tucker, Noel Norman, Dave Cohen, myself, live from the Presbyter in the historic Jackson Square area from 6 a.m. to 4 p.m. You'll hear interviews about stories involving rescues and recovery and the rebirth of America's most beloved city. And it's brought to you by Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser and Louisiana State Museums. And there's also a free symposium, Living with Hurricanes, Katrina and Beyond, a reimagined exhibition for the next generation from 10 a.m. to noon. It's one block away at the La Petite Theater, moderated by Norman Robinson, and features Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser, Walter Isaacson, Aaron Broussard, and many others. And it's free. And this tour and the updated exhibition at the Presbyter is open from noon to 4 p.m., free and open to the public. I'm Scoot, and we'll be right back on WWL. Boy, it seemed like the help wasn't going to come quickly enough, but we did get a lot of help eventually. And I remember President George W. Bush did not pay a lot of attention to us right away. And there were even politicians who wondered whether or not it was worth rebuilding the city of New Orleans. And of course, it was worth it. And I may be mistaken, but I thought Bill O'Reilly was one of those who was just questioning whether or not New Orleans was worth rebuilding because of Bourbon Street, and it's dirty and it's just full of debauchery. And I mean, of course, that's, you know, one image of New Orleans, but that debauchery is something that attracts a lot of people here. And as long as you are not doing anything illegal, debauchery is okay. So anyway, a lot of bad things happened that have changed. And the way the government responds to tragedies has changed as a result to what we experienced. It's a shame that we had to be the example that things needed to change. But in a lot of ways, we were the example. I'm Scoot on the air. Glad you're with us. And we continue remembering Katrina 20 years later. Friday is the official anniversary. We're still talking about a few other things, but we are remembering Katrina 20 years later. And coming up, I'm going to go to the next break with a song from Cowboy Mouth called The Avenue. And Fred LeBlanc wrote that song. And it's about the city. And Fred has a lot of feelings about Katrina. In fact, Coleman, let's call Fred. Let's try to get Fred LeBlanc on the phone. I want to talk to him about that. But in the meantime, let's go to Chuck and Gonzalez. Chuck, you're on WWL. Good afternoon.
Hey, Scoot, real quick first. Yeah, a lot of people thought we shouldn't build a city after Katrina, but Katrina was like a watershed event because it seemed like it was, to me, the beginning of this mass destruction that's happening in the world right now with global warming, the floods, the fires, the Sandy kind of was the next one that came around, which was bigger than even Katrina in reality. And New York got hit, so now the attention's drawn there. And now you can't escape it. Wherever you are, there's some disaster. But that, you know, Katrina, I think, was the beginning of it all, it seemed like. Prior to that, you know, there was a hurricane there, but the oceans are warming so fast now, it's almost impossible to stop.
Yeah, so except that when you do go back, though, Chuck, and you look at the anatomy of Katrina, you really have to look at not the natural storm, but just the failure of the levees and some of the incompetence of the Army Corps of Engineers leading up to that.
Well, yeah, that's the crazy part, because we wouldn't be talking about New Orleans. Maybe we would have been talking more about Biloxi and Pasquistan, right, and Bay St. Louis, because they got totally destroyed.
Yeah, and we can't forget about all those along the Mississippi Gulf Coast, because they're the ones that took the real hit from the wind and the rain of Katrina. And so often they feel like they're left out, and I don't want to leave them out. You know, you're a very important part of our show, and I don't want to leave any of you out if you're, you know, along the Gulf Coast area.
Absolutely not. But I was going to jump to that Florida story. I think what's happened is with the advent of the internet and widespread social media, mass media, you know, there were rich people all the time. There were bad things happening all the time. But so much is, you know, we constantly are inundated with to become jealous of rich people, to be hateful of people that aren't like us, gay people maybe. You know, just everything we're inundated with it so much. It's just like air conditioning got people inside. We don't even know who our neighbors are. I think the internet is spreading good things sometimes. It can help people, but that's not what usually catches on easily. It's the hatred. And I don't know. I don't think there's any turning
that's true.
Back. I think we're in trouble.
I think you're right about that. Facebook is the worst. Instagram is a lot better, and I love being on Substack. Man, if any of you haven't downloaded the Substack app yet, I encourage you to do it. You're not going to always agree with everything. You get great news. I'm posting videos every day on Substack. Download the Substack app and just search Scoot on the Air, and please subscribe, and I'll do the best I can to bring you entertainment every day. Hey, sounds like you got company there, Chuck.
Well, I'm babysitting two weenie dogs. But one more thing.
Yeah.
The road rage. I know you've experienced it. We've all experienced it. And that's just another piece of the symptoms of everything. There's so much road rage. I mean, you can't drive the streets anymore without almost somebody driving you off the road.
No,
that poor girl that got shot and they had to deliver her baby C-section. She's dead and they're delivering her unborn baby C-section.
Yeah.
It's just this growing... I almost feel like Ghostbusters, like, you know, like there's this evilness that's hovering over the cities or whatnot. Yeah. We just can't seem to get it out of ourselves.
Well, and Chuck, the guy who shot the guy in the truck with the gun, you think he would like to make that decision again? But he can't. And he's now being charged with murder. So, you know, basically his life is over. At least the life that he knew is over, and it's really sad that guy allowed his road rage to dictate his behavior. And as upset as you get at somebody on the road, just don't let that rage take over. All right, Fred LeBlanc joins us here on WWL. Fred, good afternoon.
No.
Oh, we don't have Fred yet?
No, not yet.
Okay, hang on. We're going to get Fred here in just a moment. Let's go to Ninth Ward Nero. Ninth Ward Nero, you're on WWL.
Hey, what's up? What's up, Scoot?
Hell, I don't even know anymore.
I got one thing. I love you. And that's what I want to tell you.
I appreciate
and,
that.
I got one thing. I got one thing to say. With a couple of callers back, you were saying that about the LGBT. I think that community with the flags, right? And you said one thing wrong and I'm gonna tell you that you're wrong when you say that it represent black people. It don't represent black people. It represent the LGBT.
Yeah. Well, look. Let me explain that. I know what it represents. I was surprised that apparently in some cases the intent was that it also represented African Americans, and that's the first time that I had heard that. But this was in a few particular situations in Florida. The intent was to have it. The intent was to have it represent Black Americans as well. But I understand that it generally refers to the LGBTQ community. All right. So, Nero, listen, I appreciate the call. All right, we've got Fred now. Fred, welcome to the show.
Hey, Scooter. How you doing, man?
Good. I want to take just a minute and talk to you because, you know, a lot of people see this like crazy guy on stage and you're maniacal and you look like you have mental health issues and you're crazy behind the drums and it's all very, very entertaining. But there is a really soft, sensitive, insightful side of you. And that is really obvious in the writing of the song, The Avenue. And so since we're remembering Katrina 20 years later, let's just spend a minute talking to you about Katrina.
Shoot. What do you want to know?
Well, just what stands out in your mind as your first impression of what happened, and then talk about where we are today.
There's a million Katrina stories. We were, my band was, we had actually played in Atlanta the night before, so we were stuck outside of town for a while. I had managed to get back in because I had a friend who was a mucky muck with the Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Office. So I got in town about a week later, and it was just surreal. It was bad. It was terrible. But I remember watching the news live on one of the news stations while we were stuck in Georgia, and I remember because we had gone through like a 20 or 30 year period where the big one was going to hit, the big one was going to hit, the big one was going to hit, and then the last second, it would take a turn or a dip, whatever the hurricane was. And whew, we've survived that one. Okay, we got lucky, and then this one. And they were saying that the morning, the Monday morning, I think it was the day after it hit, And I'll never forget, it was like early morning, I saw like some guy who's on Canal Street sitting there saying, well, it looks like New Orleans has missed another bad hurricane, so, you know, it's pretty. But then again, like, there's all this water coming down Canal Street. What's that all about? And I remember at that moment, I went, oh, God. At that moment, I just knew. It's like, okay, the levees have been breached. It's over.
Yeah. You know?
It was rough, you know. I mean, to put it into just words is just, I just don't think it's possible, you know, to sit here and give you a soundbite that'll work. I think, you know, it was just, there was just a collective sense of just, you know, of just, what can I say?
Despair? I mean, it was,
despair.
Yeah.
Despair. Despair, because, you know, I didn't know exactly how the media worked back then as, you know, as I do now, just being subject to the last 10 to 15 to 20 years we've all been through, and just, you know, how, you know, they basically kind of hypnotize you into thinking whatever it is they want you to think. So
right.
You're glued to the news stations and it's like, oh my God, it's all over. Oh my God, it's all over. It's like, wait, it's not all over. It'll, you know, it's terrible now, but, and eventually somehow it'll get better. You know, we'll just pull up our drawers and, you know, just do what needs to be done. You know, we lost a guitar player over it. And we had a guitar player named Paul Sanchez who was in the band, and his house got wiped away. And it just kind of clicked off a series of events that got him to leave the band about a year later, which he needed to do. He needed to go do his own thing. He needed to be an artist in his own right. But it affected everybody, you know? I mean, when I had a house, I was living uptown at the time around the Carrollton and Claiborne area. And I remember thinking when I bought the house, I was like, okay, this, you know, the city floods every 30 to 40 years. I better buy something that's raised. And I bought something that was raised, and I just got lucky. You know what I mean? My whole street was flooded, but the water didn't come up. The water came up to my house, but it didn't come up until like right under the floors. So I didn't, you know, wasn't really that bad in terms of damage. I mean, I had to get a new roof, but comparatively speaking, I was very fortunate. But, you know, it caused a lot of upheaval. It caused a lot of, you know, there was a collective sense of just loss, you know, just, you know, I remember thinking at the time, you know, I was looking at the television and, you know, my neighborhood, they were flying helicopters around my neighborhood and gas lines were blowing up and houses were on fire. And I remember I just had this thought of just saying, okay, everything I have is gone. Everything I have is gone, but everyone I know is fine. You know, my family's fine. But I remember thinking, and just that kind of acceptance of just like, okay, everything's gone. And I'll never forget. It was Eric Paulson from WWL TV. He was a friend, and he, you know, a couple of days later, he went driving around in the neighborhoods, and he drove by my house and texted me. Hey. And let me know that my house was actually fine, you know, relatively speaking. It was like,
Fred, okay. Can you hang on for just a minute? We've got some breaking news. So just hold on. We're talking to Fred LeBlanc of Cowboy Mouth about remembering Katrina 20 years later. But let's go into the newsroom. Chris Miller's got some breaking news for us.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt, Scoop, but commuters, especially on the North Shore, will want to know that due to a wreck on the causeway, the southbound bridge is closed at this time. We'll let you know when it reopens, but right now you can't get southbound on the Lake Pontchartrain Causeway.
You know, it's a long way around I-25 to the Frank Davis, Naturally Nolan twin spans. It's a long way around to I-55 as well. So no idea on how long it's going to be closed?
Not at this time.
Okay. All right, we'll let you know. Thanks for the update, Chris. Hey, Fred, let me take a break, and we'll come back with more. Let's just get a taste of the song, The Avenue. And I want to ask Fred more about this song and how it reflects just the spirit of New Orleans, and it... It really does reflect who we are. And as wild and crazy as Fred can be on stage, there is a very deep side of him, a poetic side of him that is able to even talk about a tragedy in a song and have it make sense. So here's The Avenue as we go to break, and I'm Scoot, and we'll be right back with Fred on WWL. This is Cowboy Mouth, Fred LeBlanc. The song is The Avenue. Fred, a tragedy like Katrina provides an emotion that inspires a songwriter like yourself. Talk about writing The Avenue.
I was very conscious about what I wanted to do. I didn't want to write the typical kind of New Orleans will be back again and party and blah, blah, blah. And I didn't want to write something that would be very dour and angry, right? And I just had this vision of, it was literally just a vision of me sitting next to a friend on a street corner, but the friend was the city of New Orleans, and the friend had just been in a really bad, bad, bad bar fight and been on the losing end. And I just kind of imagined myself putting my arm around this friend going, okay, this is really, really bad. This is really bad. But eventually it will get better. And that's kind of the mindset of where I was where when the song hit me and everything like that. There's a lot of stories about this song and when we played it to audiences for the first time. But there's on YouTube, there's a live version of us doing it the first time that the House of Blues reopened when it was still, you know, like a thing down there. And it's not a video, it's an audio. But it's the first time everybody in the room has heard the song. It's before even we released it, and we started with it that night. I remember that because specifically that was Paul's idea. It's like, we need to start with the song. I was like, oh, that's a good idea. So we did that, and you can hear people reacting to every single line. It's on YouTube. It's like Cowboy Mouth, The Avenue Live, House of Blues first. It was in December of 2005, and we were the first band back. We were the first band back after Katrina, and it was a sellout, and it was a great show. But that was the first song we played. It was that was pretty intense.
That's a
we
song.
We also did the song on Mardi Gras 2006 on the Ellen DeGeneres show. Yeah. I remember that.
Fred, as a songwriter, to get that kind of reaction from the audience must just be overwhelming and very comforting.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, we were all going through the same thing. I was just, honestly, I was just lucky enough to get the song. I mean, you know, every once in a while you get one that just presents itself to you as a gift and says, here I am. All you got to do is write me down and sing me. And the avenue was just like that. It was just there. I was like, okay, there it is.
But I love your explanation, and I love the criteria that you use to do the song, and it really to me is it's a great song. And you know, I think back on some of the great rock ballads and some of the heavy metal bands that were known for their heavy metal music. Their biggest hit was their ballad, their rock ballad. And I kind of feel that way about The Avenue. You know, as wild as Cowboy Mouth can be on stage, you know, The Avenue is that ballad that is just very meaningful.
Yeah, it's, we were trying to do, we were putting together an album at the time, and we were trying to decide if the song was going to be on the album. There were some people in the band that liked it and some people that didn't. And I remember the producer we had, a guy named Rusty Cobb out of Atlanta. He says, I'm not from New Orleans, but this song moves me. I was like, okay, well, there you go. And whatever the idea or the emotion it was supposed to get across, it did.
Wow.
You know, even to people who didn't, you know, go through that. But I mean, you know, it's on the one hand, you know, I've said this many, many times, you know. I mean, we've done a lot. We've done a lot since. We have a new album that just came out. But honestly, if the only reason this band existed was just to be there in that moment, to have that song for that generation of people who went through that event, then, you know, it's completely worth it.
It's very generous of you to have that that attitude, seriously. So talk for a moment about the new album. It's an album of covers. Here's what I love. I love that Cowboy Mouth puts their signature on a cover, and you don't try to do it exactly the way the artist did it.
Hell no. It's an album that's called Cover Your Ass. It's available everywhere on all the streaming services. We're going to have a vinyl for it. John Thomas Griffith does a killer version of The Who's song The Real Me. We do Can't Hardly Wait by The Replacements. We do a punk rock version of My Way by Frank Sinatra and Sid Vicious.
I want to hear that.
It's fun. The whole album was just fun. It came out of nowhere. John had an idea to do the album, and I was like, well, why not? It felt like, and at this stage of the game, it's not about trying to get this thing or get this market share or this. Is it going to be fun?
Yeah.
Great. Let's do it. It's not going to be fun. Don't do it.
It's a great place to be in life when your goal is to just have fun. And, you know, ironically, instead of trying so hard to make something happen, if you just go out to have fun, sometimes that's the stuff that really works.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. It's not fun. You know, there's easier ways to make a living. And, you know, I'm very blessed to have this band. I've been very blessed to have every single iteration of this band and every single musician who's been in this band. And, you know, you know, at this stage of the game, you know, it's got to be fun. It's got to be fun.
Yeah. All right, Fred, I got to get to a break here. Listen, we'll talk again we'll talk again really soon, and let's talk about the new album, and I'll sample some of it on the show.
Take care, buddy. Love you.
All right, love you too, man. Fred LeVault, Cowboy Mouth. I'm Scoot, and we'll be right back on WWL. On the Scoot on the Air calendar, on this day in 1989, Izzy Stradlin of Guns N' Roses was arrested at the Phoenix airport after urinating on the floor of the plane. He got upset that he was having to wait to use the bathroom. His publicist said that that was just Izzy's way of expressing himself. Well, I think he needs to find another way to express himself and relieve himself. That's the guy who got kicked out of Guns N' Roses because he did too many drugs. Now, you know, I've said this before. How many drugs do you have to do? How bad do you have to be when it comes to drugs to get kicked out of Guns N' Roses because you do more drugs than the other guys? All right, a lot more still to come. Cracker Barrel is now going back to the old logo and the old stuff. And President Trump suggested that's what they should do. And also, we'll get to the information that conservative MAGA host Charlie Kirk has for newly engaged Taylor Swift. That's next on WWL.